Greetings, greetings, and welcome to the show. Welcome back. If you're listening to this as they drop, we just spoke yesterday for the first episode of this retrospective celebrating the series A Grifter Song. Today, we are going to talk about books 3, 4, and 5. Now, if you just happen to be stumbling on this for the first time, A Grifter's Song is a novella anthology series that I created and edited for Down and Out Books. 35 episodes, 30 different authors, and we are celebrating that series as it comes to an end with episode number 35 on October 1st of 2023 by going over all of the episodes and hearing from all of the authors. So as I mentioned, today we are going to talk to Lawrence Kelter, who wrote book 3, The Whale, Gary Phillips, who wrote book 4, The Movie Makers, and Colin Conway, who wrote book 5, Lost in Middle America. Now, all of these books, as well as the entire series, was published by Down and Out Books. You can find out more about them at downandoutbooks.com. They've also sponsored this retrospective series, so I want to say thank you to them for that. With all of that being said, let's talk about episode 3, The Whale. Now, you may have heard in the previous episode, all of these authors were invitation only and were very gracious to say yes. Lawrence Kelter is a writer that I knew from previous collaborations. At that point, I think we had written 2 books together. We eventually wrote a third, kind of a black comedy called No Dibs on Murder. So it was really a no-brainer for me to extend an invitation to him to write an episode. And he responded with The Whale. Now, at the time, Lawrence was living in the New York area. So that's where he set this story. And of course, that is one of the great things about these books. Different con, different location, different perspective, different author voice every time out. And certainly that's the case here as we are in Manhattan. Sam and Rachel are conning their way into an exclusive club using the identity of a guy that is hardly ever around, and they concoct a way to try to scam some of the members. Now, the interesting thing about this episode is that it contrasts greatly with the previous 2 episodes, really, which were much more street-level, gritty sort of approaches. Albeit in very different locations. And in this one, you know, they're in this posh club and they kind of take on those personas. I mean, we kind of expect Sam and Rachel to be chameleons of a sort, and they definitely adapt to their environment. And here they pretend to be very upscale. And the con that they come up with, the scam they present to these members, is also pretty upscale. So this is more of an Ocean's 11 sort of feel or vibe to it thing. So that's a nice change up. There is a character in this particular book who shows up again in the final episode, but I'll leave you to discover that on your own. Let's hear from Lawrence Kelter about The Whale. So, Larry, the first question I've been asking everybody so far is, what made you say yes when you were invited to be part of the series?
Well, you know, the obvious answer is because you asked me. You know, we've got history together. We're buddies. You know, it sounded like a fun thing to try. I like the characters. I like where it was going. And you know, this is what writing is about. It's about taking little, you know, taking chances. So, yeah, it sounded like a fun thing to try.
Now, if I remember correctly, your story was something you came up with specifically for A Grifter's Song.
Yeah, I did come up with it specifically, you know, to meet the demands of the program or the novella. I don't know. I think, like most of my books, something just came to me spontaneously. You know, maybe I drew from some of the, you know, the films or books I've read in the past. You know, the Ocean's 11 type crew, and you know, they're just, you know, they're cooler than ice, and you know, and they can just, you know, figure out things on the fly. And it was basically how the story came to me. You know, I'm always looking to construct something with a lot of twists and turns in it. Yeah, that's where it took shape from.
Now, you mentioned the demands of the series. One of those demands was a little bit of a rule book. There were some boundaries in place that you had to operate within. Did you struggle with that? Was that easy for you? How did it impact you?
You know, it took a lot of, well, not a lot, it took some planning. I had read your kickoff story, and I think I read the one that followed it. I think I was number three in the lineup. And I took some of the cues from those. I think every writer is a reader first. So, I read your story. I kind of took some cues from that. Everybody interprets characters differently. You know, 1,000 people can read your story and come up with 1,000 different visions of what the characters are, what they look like, and how they behave, and whether they like them or not. And, I kind of identified with... I felt some literary kinship with Sam and Rachel, and created a vision for me.
What was it about them that you liked?
Oh, I like that they think on the fly, that they've more than anything, that they've got each other's back. At the heart of it, it's a love story. They have a plan. At the end of this thing, they want to have a life where they're not grifting, where they're just, together somewhere remarkable, like Fiji or the Bahamas or someplace untouchable by the law. And, I think that's what drives them, They go about it differently than most people would, but works for them.
Did you have a favorite moment in your story, something that you really enjoyed writing, or that when it was finished, you kind of sat back and said, that's pretty good?
I think not so much a moment, but, thematically, because they're living in this world of, villains and thieves, so to speak, that the game is constantly changing. They have a plan and then they're thrown a curve. And then they think everything is going swimmingly and you find out that somebody was double dealing. They think they've got a mark who's got everything they're looking for in a mark, but he's not that person, or he doesn't have the qualifications they were really looking for. So I like the fact that they can switch on the fly, that they think on their feet, they're throwing a curve, they make an adjustment, and they move on. And then before they know it, there's something else that comes out at the left field and kind of knocks them off course. But they navigate back onto a winning trajectory.
Well, you were with Sam and Rachel near the very beginning, and now their journey, at least literary journey, is coming to an end with episode number 35, Into the Dying Sun, which will drop on October 1st. If you had to decide how to end this series, how would you do it?
Well, I think, very much the way they handle each episode, that they're going to have a happy ending, but it may not be the happy ending they were looking for, that they... we'll come out with a satisfactory resolve, so to speak, that their outcome, makes them smile, but it may not be the nirvana they were looking for, but maybe a different nirvana, and maybe in a way better than the one they had planned.
Well, Sam and Rachel are by far not the only thing that you've written. You've got a pretty healthy back catalog. What's the most recent release, and where can people find out more about you?
Well, I've got a book coming out in January, and that will be the first of a new series starring a new hero, a gal from Brooklyn, a PI, who's very much like Mona Lisa Vito. She's, she's crisp and to the point, a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor. Oh, the name of the title is Mankiller. Mankiller can mean different things to different people, and I think by the time the reader gets to the end of the book, they'll have an understanding of what the title means. And that book is coming out January 12th from Black Rose Writing. We've gotten some nice praise for it, early praise. And, I'm hoping the book will find an audience. If people are interested, they can always check my website, lawrencekelter.com, or check me out on Amazon or Goodreads or, any of those places people turn to when they want information on writers.
Well, if they do that, they will discover multiple series in different subgenres of mystery. So definitely worth a journey there to find your next book, folks. Larry, I want to say that I really appreciate you coming on board, especially in the first season here before this was anything other than an idea, and writing a great story. And thanks for doing this podcast as well.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you, Frank. Thanks for asking me.
All right. Thank you, Lawrence Kelter, for your thoughts on the whale. Like I said, a different tone than the first two. For the fourth book, we bomb on out to the other coast, all the way out to Los Angeles. Not just Los Angeles, but the Los Angeles film scene for The Movie Makers by Gary Phillips. Now, I mentioned in the first episode when I did the background that Gary was working on a series that had this serial novella anthology format, six episodes by six different authors, all using the same characters drawn up by a showrunner of sorts, and that was Gary. I was fortunate enough to be considered to write one of those episodes. He ended up not doing the project or delaying it, and so it may still get off the ground. Last time I mentioned it to him, he said that was a possibility. But he was gracious enough to let me use that same format, which I quickly recognized would work very well with a Grifter song, far better than me writing one per quarter. That may have become stale after three or four, but there's been 35 of these and they're not stale yet. And that can be attributed to the model that Gary introduced and that I used with his permission and blessing. And of course, it was only right to ask him if he'd like to be involved after providing the format. And he was cool enough to say yes. And when I say cool, I mean cool. Gary is a cool guy. And he's been into some very cool things. And he wrote, believe it or not, a cool story. The Movie Makers takes place, like I said, in LA. Sam is posing as a life coach, and they're trying to con a movie star who is kind of trying to have a renaissance of sorts. And I don't want to spoil it any more than that, other than to say that one of the things that Gary does so well in here, one of several things, is really capture what seems to me to be the tone of that environment, the way people behave and act, and their little tics that come along with being part of the film industry. And it was kind of fascinating for someone like myself who always wanted to be involved in film. He paints it in a way that makes me glad I'm not, but it's very well done. And of course there's a plot there that is very fun to follow. But I took particular joy in the smaller details that when you read it, you'll pick up on, that just really highlight the yoga mat carrying, you know, chai drinking, see you later, babe sort of behavior that permeates that industry. And several folks who I've talked to who are also in that industry, some of whom are authors for this series, also pointed that out in private conversations. So it's not just me. So let's hear what Gary has to say about The Movie Makers. So, Gary, I have been asking everybody right out of the chute what it is that made them decide to be part of this project when I asked. I think your answer is going to be a little different than most people's, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, is it because of my love for con people? Maybe that's it.
No, the format being basically you proposed this format for a different project that ended up.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So. You could have been a horrible writer and a bad guy, and I still would have asked you to be part of it because you came up with the idea. Luckily, you're a great writer and a great guy.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
But what else maybe made you say yes?
You know, I think, Frank, it's always, being a crime fiction writer, and I've written books from, usually from the perspective, I might say, at least the crime fiction books I've written. I mean, it's distinct from the mysteries. Written from the perspective of the bad guys, of the anti-heroes. And so I think when this opportunity came to, give my take on this this nefarious couple, how could I say no? I mean, really, it's such a great tradition in the genre. So yeah, man, there was no way I could pass it up.
Well, you wrote about something you know about, life in the
crazy place known as Hollywood. was this story idea something that you developed once you were part of the project, or was it an idea that kind of had been floating around there and just was a perfect fit?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both, Frank. I think, as you said, I you know, here I am born and raised in L.A. and having a little toehold in Hollywood now and then. And then, observing it like everybody else observes it, and but also understanding or having an appreciation for some of its history and its quirkiness and the kind of people that it has attracted and still continues to attract. I thought, well, okay, what better playground for these two, this couple, who are, you know, under the gun, under pressure themselves, but of course still have to ply their trade, right? Still have to make money. And what better place to try to make that in the land where we invent ourselves, where you can become somebody different, where you can change your past in hopes of changing your future, and of course, how better to look at that, at least with a somewhat, you know, jaundiced eye, but also I think a bit of a tongue in cheek through their eyes.
You've worked on a number of different collaborative projects before. I mean, graphic novels is a very collaborative process. And so I don't imagine that working in, with, you know, a predefined set of rules was very much a hindrance for you. But maybe I'm wrong. How did you feel about having that rule book in place for how to work through the story?
Yeah, for Sam and Rachel, I didn't feel constrained in that way. And I felt in a lot of ways, I think partly because I work better when I have an existing deadline, or I tend to work better when I have a sense of a fairly tight outline. So I think to me, the more I have a certain sense of what the parameters are, and of course, understanding I'm going to deviate, but having a sense of then, okay, we can kind of jump into the sandbox with these two. And I know that there are certain things I have to, you know, adhere to, obviously, because you have to be consistent with the characters in that regard. But in the other regard, there was a lot of leeway and a lot of play to, present them as you wanted to. So I thought that was the best of both worlds in the sense of then being able to execute the story that I wanted to tell.
Yeah, and your story is one of the few that have what could be called a direct sequel of sorts within the series, Lawrence Maddox.
Yes.
Drew heavily on the foundation that you set. Was there something about these characters in particular that you liked or that you discovered while you were writing that you thought was cool or anything along those lines?
It's always interesting to me when you watch stories or read stories about con people, particularly in this regard where there are a couple, right? A man and a wife. And at the end of the day, you know, they're not trustworthy people, and yet in a pinch when their backs are up against it, they have to trust each other. So I always think that's a great, wonderful tension to underlie this kind of story, right? That as you're telling the story, and as we glimpse what Sam does, and we glimpse what Rachel does, and how they have to work together, and obviously at times how they have to improvise because they sometimes get caught off guard, and that's just the nature of the con. At the end, though, when it's all said and done, they do have to rely on each other. And it's always I just find it kind of interesting because it does say, and I have no idea what you portend for the end of this. But the idea that, you know, we have only each other to trust, but we're both con people. So
it's almost counterintuitive, right?
Con stories, you always will see that the inside the con, they have to rely on each other. But can they really? You know, can they really? When the big guns come out, and maybe I can sacrifice, you know, you to save me, well, will I do that?
Yeah, it's been an interesting evolution to watch as these two characters have proven time and again that they're loyal to each other, and I think this comes up in a lot of crime fiction where, you know, loyalty is objectively an admirable trait, even if it's misplaced.
Right.
Spoilers aside, was there a favorite moment from your episode that you just either had a great time coming up with or writing or reading back?
I think I really like the yoga scene or the aftermath of the yoga scene. I guess because to me it, you know, says so much about Hollywood, and I'm all for yoga. I think once you, you know, stretch and keep in shape, and as I get older, I think these things are important. But it's become such a trope, right? And become such almost a I don't know, not quite a cliche, but maybe it's getting there. You know, the whole thing with walking the small dog and carrying your yoga mat under your arm, and wanting to subvert that a little bit with Rachel and her confrontation in that regard. And so, yeah, I just think to play with that a bit and to say, well, all right, yes, it's all, you know, high minded and we're all what's the word now? It's not self. Well, I guess self care is one of the words, and the whole thing. Yeah, yes, exactly. Enlightened and all that kind of thing. And that's all good and well. But sometimes the gloves come off and then what do you do?
So that's yours. I mentioned Lawrence Maddox, his episode, the Down and Out, was a little bit of a sequel to yours.
Right.
Were there any other episodes that you read? And if you did, where did any stand out for you?
I did read several of the others, but, you know, it's been a little while. And of course, my answer was going to be Larry's, because, of course, you know, they're tied together. And so and Larry even talked to me a little bit about it, and we kind of went back and forth. So honestly, that definitely is the one that sticks in my mind, because, of course, to me, they're kind of these, you know, bookend pieces. And I just get a kick out of that. Right. That it's almost like a subset of the subset. Right. I mean, we're following them, but then now, and then we have this other story that kind of follows him from the story that I had. And then, you know, then of course you depart from that again, but I just kind of get a charge out of that. And I think, you know, really, and there's going to be a little bit down a tributary, but it'll all work together. And it really comes from my love in the end, I think, from having grown up reading Marvel comics and thinking about, you know, the Marvel universe. And now of course there's the DC universe, but the idea that these characters exist in a world in which they operate. And I think this is always the great kick. And I think particularly with this kind of series where, you know, something that's kind of insignificant or a side character or a tertiary character in one chapter, in one episode or one outing may become more prominent in another outing. And I always think that's kind of interesting that you can weave those characters in and out of these kinds of situations. And obviously there's that aspect too, to their existence, even being on the run, because there is the big bad that's out there to get them. And that figures in, of course, in the overall, arc of this series. And so I think to me that's what I get a kick out of, is that you can, you know, these characters that are off stage in one outing are in fact center stage in another outing.
Well, you mentioned, you know, that you weren't sure how things were going to wrap up. If it were up to you, how would you end this series?
Oh man, that's interesting, right? I mean, I think we're required, Frank, because of just the sophistication of our audiences these days, to give them something different, right? So it's probably not going to be the fiery shootout climax. Do they get away? Would it be, I suppose, I mean, to sort of go back to what I was broaching a little earlier, is it that one of them has to sacrifice to save the other, but it's truly a sacrifice that is not about them being selfish or venal, but in the end, they really do love one another. But does it seem as if, in fact, to one of them, it's a sellout? But in the end, we, the reader, know, it wasn't. It was a sacrifice. Now, can you do that? Can that trick be? I think that trick can be done. And I suppose I would think about that. If it were me and I was writing that last episode, I would think about that. And I would think about, can I pull that off? Can you do both things? Can you make it, we, the reader, know what this is, but the character thinks it's, in fact, it's something different?
I won't give any clues as to how close you are on some points and how far off on others. I'll let you wait till October 1st.
In the meantime,
you know, what is your most recent release, or what are you working on now, and where can people find out more about you?
What I'm working on now, Frank, is I've just turned in the third draft, third rewrite, tweaks, etc., on Ash Dark as Night, which is a kind of, it is a sequel to my novel that came out last year, One Shot Harry, which did pretty well, I think, for Soho Crime. And this story is now set in 1965, right as the Watts riots or the Watts rebellion, depending on your political point of view, is underway. My character, Harry Ingram, is once again, he's a crime photographer, once again in the midst of it. So I've been very happy with the results of that. But that won't be out till next year. And then South Central Noir, I guess that's the most recent work by me, or an anthology by me, which is a bunch of stories set where I grew up in Los Angeles, the infamous South Central. And it's a great collection of stories from different time periods, from different perspectives. And I think it seemed to have done well for Akashic. And of course, it's among Akashic's 100 some odd in their noir series. But I've been very happy with that as well.
And people can go where to read about that or your upcoming work?
Oh, I do have a website, but I don't necessarily maintain it much anymore. But I'm there occasionally. I'm sorry. And I should mention, yes, I have a collection of my more sci-fi pulp stories coming out from Three Rooms Press. So that's where they can go. They can go to the Three Rooms Press site and you'll see an interview up there with me. And also there's one of the stories, a sci-fi story, Crag's Last Escape, has been excerpted on the Amazing Stories magazine website. So that's actually definitely more the more recent or upcoming.
Excellent. Well, Gary, I want to thank you for inspiring very directly the format of this serial anthology series and for being such a good sport about me grabbing onto it and using it, and certainly for writing a great episode and for being part of this podcast as well.
Well, I appreciate it, Frank, and thanks for inviting me in. I appreciate it so much.
All right. Well, you can see what I mean when I said he's a cool guy. And what a fun voice to listen to. I mean, just a tremendous baritone. I mentioned it to him at the VoucherCon Mystery Conference earlier here in September. And he just laughed and said, yeah, my father has the same voice. So anyway, so great story, Gary. Thanks for writing it and for lending the format of this series to me. I really appreciate it. I'm grateful. And you know, folks, this isn't the last that you'll hear of the Movie Makers. I mean, there's an episode later on that riffs off of it very directly, and a couple that used it for certain inspirations. So there's hints of Gary Phillips later on in this series. But let's move on now to episode 5, book 5 of A Grifter Song, Lost in Middle America by Colin Conway. Now, anyone who knows me probably knows that I'm good friends with Colin. We've written a number of books together. The first was Some Degree of Murder, which is in my River City series, and currently my only collaborative series that's open and has new installments coming is the Charlie 316 series. We've got The Silence of the Dead coming in 2024, which is possibly the most ambitious book that we've written in the series. And anyways, Colin's a good friend and excellent writer. You should check out his 509 series if you like procedurals. So it was really a no-brainer to ask him to take part. And so he came up with a great story involving, of all things, pimps and prostitutes and comic books. Now, if those three things don't sound like they should go together, it's probably because they shouldn't, but they do in this story really nicely. Lost in Middle America is an interesting title because Colin spent some time in Ohio. There's a town in Ohio called Lima, Ohio, and that's what some people say the initials stand for, Lost in Middle America. And so he used that for the title. The thumbnail sketch of this is that there is a young pimp who has a stable of prostitutes. An older pimp, who the stable used to belong to, gets out of prison and enlists Sam and a reluctant Rachel in an effort to get revenge against this guy who took over his business, essentially. Meanwhile, this guy is investing in premier rare comic books and gold and silver bars in order to hide his income and to provide for his future. This was an interesting story simply because of the content, but it was also interesting because it was one of the first times in the series that Sam and Rachel have a disagreement of any proportion at all. And the argument is over whether or not to help this guy. You know, Sam used to know him because sometimes he needed to employ prostitutes in a scam. And so this was a contact that he had in order to do that. Rachel is not happy about the idea of helping out someone who exploits women. And it is only when the prospect of profit is injected into the situation that she reluctantly relents. And so it makes for some interesting tension. So there's the setup. Let's find out what Colin has to say about Lost in Middle America. Well, hey, Colin, I will get straight to the question I've been asking everybody first, and that is, when you were asked to join a Grifter song, what made you say yes?
You did.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. No, it's just, we've been friends for quite some time. So when you invited me to participate, I jumped at it. It was, you know, kind of an easy yes. So I blame you for it.
Well, I will take the blame. You know, this isn't exactly something that's outside your wheelhouse at all. It fits in really nicely with especially your early short story work. Was this a story that you came up with once you came on board, or did the did it have its beginnings in a different idea, or how'd that happen?
No, it totally came up after the invitation. It was a about the same time I had finished reading a book called Pimp by Iceberg Slim, written back in the late 60s, I believe, maybe early 70s. Anyway, that kind of was rolling around in my brain. And then at the same time, I always wanted to do a story that had an element of comic books in it. I don't collect them anymore, but I did for a long time. And I thought I could put some of that knowledge to work. So I married up those two ideas of that came from the book Pimp, along with these comic books. And that's where that story germinated.
This series did come with set characters, at least the main characters, and some definite foul lines that you had to play within. I know you've done that before, but how was it this time? Did you find it difficult? Was it something that you enjoyed?
I didn't find it difficult at all. When you invited me, I was part of the first season. And so those bumper reels allowed me to, you know, streamline the process, if you will, of writing a story. You already provided me the main characters and some of their backstory. So all I had to do was focus on the plot. You and I had worked on one of your stories in your River City series, Some Degree of Murder. And that was kind of the same thing, where I was allowed to go up to the bumper rail, bang against it, but I couldn't do anything bad in the River City world, that type of thing. So it wasn't all that hard. I do have to say that I applaud those authors who came in much later into the series, because they had a whole lot of history that had been laid out before them. And so I think that those folks in this last season have done a fantastic job and had a much harder journey than I did.
Well, these characters came to you already made. Was there anything about Sam or Rachel that stood out to you, that you particularly liked or wanted to explore?
You know, it was the idea of them being grifters, I thought was really, really cool. And that's such a central tenet to the story. But years ago, I had read Jim Thompson's The Grifters and loved that. Never thought I would actually write a story involving characters like that. So it was a wonderful opportunity to play in that sandbox, if you will. And I just thought it was cool.
Did you have a favorite moment in your story?
Actually, I had several favorite moments. The getting to write about a character who was, you know, saving his wealth via comic books and little gold bars and silver bars. That was really kind of cool, because I got to sneak in some neat facts about comics and then get to work along a storyline that was reminiscent of the Iceberg Slim story.
Now, you came into the series pretty early on, there's been another 30 or so episodes after yours. Have you read any of those? And if so, did any stand out to you as personal favorites?
Yeah, I've read a number of them. I can't say I read all of them, but I have to tell you, Gabriel Valjean's story was fantastic. Absolutely loved that one. It took place in New Jersey, if I remember correctly. And I dug that story so much.
Yeah, Diamond Dogs.
Diamond Dogs, that's it.
So you wrote these two characters in your episode. You've read a number of the other episodes. How do you think it should end?
You know, I'd like to say that it should end in a happy, right off into the sunset story, but that would be disingenuous to how the series has gone. I mean, this has not been an easy road for them, and it does seem like there needs to be some exceptional cost at the end.
Well, when I said this was in your wheelhouse, I meant it. You've written a lot of crime fiction. You have your 509 series of procedurals, your John Cutler action private detective series, the Sam Strait series, which I think is like sort of like a Rockford redux in a way. And then, of course, your Cozy Up series, which is pretty hilarious. And if somebody doesn't like cozies, they'll like these. And if they do like cozies, they'll like these. What do you have coming out here in October of 2023?
Well, that will be the 12th book in the 509 crime stories. It's called The Night of the Dead Boys, and it is a action story, if you will. I mean, it starts immediately in the first paragraph and does not let up until the end. It's a different style or type of novel in that series. Most of those are traditional police procedurals. So there's a lot of attention paid to the techniques and the road that homicide detectives have to go down. This one is from a portion of the story is from one of the criminals, and he's on the run, and that's how the story sets up. And that pace, like I said, never relents.
Yeah, that is a high octane read. And your most recent Cozy Up to Terror is still pretty new, right?
Yeah, that one came out at the beginning of August. It's the seventh in that series. And our hero, Bo, is in Southeast Texas for this story.
Well, I love the way that you describe this to people when you say, imagine if Sons of Anarchy crashed into Cabot Cove and Jessica Fletcher. So it's a great premise, and people should be reading it. Well, Colin, I wanted to say thanks for jumping on board in season one, writing a great episode, and for doing this retrospective as well.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Frank. Glad to talk with you again.
All right, there you have it, folks. Colin Conway's thoughts on Lost in Middle America. Colin's a good friend of mine and an excellent writer. You should check out his work. And that's going to be a wrap here for the entire podcast episode. We talked about The Whale by Lawrence Kelter, The Movie Makers by Gary Phillips, and we just finished up here with Colin Conway's Lost in Middle America. Now, I will tell you that characters from Lost in Middle America do show up again later in the series in other episodes in small roles. But that's one of the nice things about this series is even outside of the final episode name checks and incorporations that I did, there are threads that wind their way through the series in different ways that you might not expect. So watch for characters from Lost in Middle America to pop up again later on. Now, in our next episode, we are going to talk about books 6, 7, and 8 in the series, Losing Streak by Jim Wilski, Come the Apocalypse by yours truly, and Gone Dead on You by Eric Pruitt. So books 6, 7, and 8 coming up next episode. That will drop tomorrow. Until then, this is Frank Zaffiro reminding you that sometimes you gotta be in the wrong place to write crime.